This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your hosts, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Today we have Jerry Green with us. I'm going to give a brief bio on Jerry. So Jerry is a native of Ohio and currently lives in Germantown, Ohio, with his wife of 19 years and their four children. Jerry started in the real estate business in 1994 after going through a bankruptcy in Springfield, Ohio. He began by wholesaling properties and then merged into fix and flips. Since that time, he has been involved with doing about 2,500 deals, including fix and flips of single and multifamily rentals and commercial properties. He soon realized there was a big difference from being in the RE business and running a real estate business. So after multiple failures, millions of dollars in mistakes, and through personal tragedy, he was able to build a true scalable real estate business. Now he works as a CEO of his real estate business and is operationally removed from the business as a whole. He does have a high volume of wholesale deals, which are also done virtually. Jerry now spends his time helping others learn the real estate business. He teaches them how to build and scale their businesses and show them how to master their acquisition skills with trainings and the Real Estate Sales Academy. So again, thank you so much, Jerry, for joining us here today. Wow, you have a pretty extensive bio here. I love it.
You're well, like, I guess that means I'm old, right?
You're like us, serial entrepreneur here.
Your experience, you know, knowledge. Yeah. So yeah. Wisdom. That was the word I was looking for. You have a lot of wisdom, no, not
I,
old.
I like, Sean, I like that better, wisdom.
Wisdom, correct.
Well, Jerry, thank you so much for joining us. I kind of want to get into, I mean, every successful person has a story, right? So you kind of shared a little bit in your bio about your story, but go into a little deeper. How did this all begin?
So you know, it's hard to believe it's been 28 years. It really is. And I go back into the 90s. And what's funny is I start telling people, a lot of people that have heard me speak before, that I share with them, but what I've done in the real estate business, what I was doing back in the 90s. And they're like, well, did that even exist back then? Like, and everything else. And I said, yes, it did. Just not many people heard about it. But it was interesting. So I take back, as you mentioned, I was in a position where I was working in the electrical contracting business with my father, and back in the early 90s.
Okay.
And I was over in Springfield, Ohio, and I lived there. I lived there with my wife, and we were started working in the business right after, as I mentioned, a major. Went through a big bankruptcy. And just so everybody understands what happened on that was, I was in the electrical contracting business with my father prior to that. And we worked with a lot of general contractors. Mm-hmm. And one of our big general contractors decided that he was going to close his doors to his organization. Well, mm-hmm. We worked as a subcontractor. So we got a call, and I'll never forget this. I was home on a Sunday night. And call came in. Of course, back then we didn't have the cell phones. It was, you know, an old wall phone, right?
I was gonna say maybe a flip phone, but it was a wall phone.
Wow. Yeah, a wall phone. So the wall phone rang, and I went over there, and I'll never forget. This guy's name is Jim, and Jim said, "Jerry, I just want to give you an advance notice that we're closing our doors to our business as of tomorrow morning."
Mm.
So that was the advance notice.
Yeah. Wow.
And. It was probably $60,000 more he owed us. And you got to remember, especially back then, very small business. You take that back in the 90s.
Yeah.
That was a huge hit. And we just weren't able to recover from that. And it was in a position where you ended up having to go bankrupt. Well, the same thing, you know, I was going through this bankruptcy and everything. And then what happened, I saw an advertisement on the local TV station. Now, remember, again, we didn't have cell phones where ads would pop up, right? Mm-hmm. So it was on the TV station, and it was about an upcoming real estate seminar in Cincinnati, Ohio. And it was a gentleman that a lot of people today have never heard of, a gentleman named Charles Gibbons.
Oh, I was going to say, maybe it's the same guy that we saw on TV, but okay. Never heard of him.
Yeah, this is way back. So he had that seminar in Cincinnati, and I went to that event for 3 days and, you know, listened to him tell me about different ways to make money in the business. Uh-huh. Of course, one of them that really stuck to me was like, hey, this wholesale thing, this could be really cool, because, you know, I was in a position here. I went to a bankruptcy, and I'm like, you know, I need cash. I need it now. So I can't wait for the, you know, cash to come in. I got to have it, what I call chunk money coming in chunks, like right away. So I came back and I said, man, I'm going to make this happen. Well, I met a gentleman there too at the event, and I ended up hiring him to become a mentor for me. The only problem is I didn't have any money to pay him. So I went to my mom and dad and borrowed their credit cards. Wow. And I paid the man $10,000 to become a mentor to me on things. And that's how I started in the business. And basically just went out and grind mode, guys. It was this solid grind. It was, you know, because, you know, I mean, people don't realize today how good they got it with pulling lists up and everything, all these crazy apps. Only app we had was a pad, a paper, and a pen. And we would go out and just start, you know, grinding. We drove neighborhoods and, you know, and I remember pulling lists for deals and literally have to go down to the courthouse, pull up the microfiche, and to pull up 50 leads, it took you all day to be able to do that and just to get their tax mailing address. So that's what I did. And I started building that up, continued to grow the business. I got to the point where then I realized I could start fixing and flipping. So I went into that model. And then when I was doing that, it was like, how do I get the money for that? So I started going to meetups, like local investor meetups. And I just get up in front of the room with a flip chart. And I basically say, hey, here's a deal I'm putting together. And what I'm looking for is capital. And I'm really looking, here's basically what it comes down to. Here's my business plan. You write a check, you shut up and wait for a bigger check. Mm-hmm. And that's what it was. And that's how I started in the flipping model. And then it continued to grow from there. And then I got to the point where it was late 90s. We were kicking butt pretty good on things. And, you know, I thought I was on top of the world. And then we rolled into the year 2000. And, everything had changed tremendously, you know, from bankruptcy to the point where we were really kicking butt in the business. And we had been written up in the local newspaper and all this stuff. And my wife and I were like, hey, you know what? We wanted to build a new home. We had the opportunity to be able to do that, build a dream home. And, you know, all these things were clicking. And we found out, too, that we were having a baby, too. And we were super excited. And later that year, in that year 2000, my wife started having complications in her pregnancy. And we were like, you know, we couldn't figure out what was going on. And we ended up going to multiple trips to the ER. And finally, they were in a position where they say, hey, we got to bring her in. We got to induce labor. So that's exactly what happened. And within about 2 hours after my baby boy was born, the doctor said, something's going on with your wife. And basically, we found out that evening that the reason that she was having these complications is because she had a cancerous tumor in her kidneys. Wow. So within 2 hours of my son being born, I found out that my wife had cancer.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was a very rare cancer for an adult to have, called Wilms tumor, typically found in kids by the age of 5. And guys, just kind of fast forward on that, we went through multiple, you know, tests and everything else. And then she ended up going for a major surgery and was actually treated in Children's Hospital in Columbus because that's her childhood cancer. And one complication after another led to her being in the hospital for 4 months straight. So I moved out of our brand new home over in Springfield, and I moved into and started living in the Ronald McDonald House over in Columbus there, right next to the Children's Hospital.
Wow.
Yeah. And I lived there for 4 months.
That is one heck of a story there, Jerry. And I mean, you know, just looking back, you know, with all the challenges that you have gone through, like what kept you, you know, just standing back up and pushing through? Because that, I mean, to go through bankruptcy, and you had to make this real estate business work, right? You had no other choice.
Absolutely.
But having to go through all these challenges, like, you know, that getting yourself in that mindset to say, hey, I'm going to press through.
Yeah, you know, it was, I'll tell you, on that side of things where, you know, after we went through all the stuff of being in the hospital and everything there. She got home, this, so everybody knows that, and we thought we were in, you know, in the good, but we found out that, you know, she basically had no, they removed both her kidneys from the surgery, completely dependent on dialysis. And the cancer reoccurred, and unfortunately, you know, my first wife passed away 10 months wow. after my boy was born. And, you know, a lot of people say, how did you even function again? Well, it, so everybody understands, it took me about 2 years to really get back to the point of functioning and stuff again. But here's the thing, is I realized that, you know, one, number one is that, you know, here I had a newborn son I had to take care of. I was widowed, and I had to, I had, mm-hmm. you know, it's like when those comes down to it, it's amazing when you're put to the challenge of either survival or not in these situations. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly where I was at. And, you know, I always think about the movie, what's it, the Shawshank Redemption?
Yeah.
Say, you know, either get busy living or get busy dying. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty well where I was at in my life. And I had to keep going. So, you know, and I did, and I started just cranking back up. But you know, the thing that really kept things together for me financially during that time was having the properties I had built up that allow me to still maintain a cash flow during that time. Because if you think about how many people, if they're working a job and they shut their, really weren't able to work for 2 years right. straight, mm-hmm. completely ruined them financially.
Yeah.
And so I was, and I did end up getting remarried to my wife now. And she said, hey, you want to marry me? You got to move to Germantown, which is part of Dayton, which is not far away, about an hour, mm-hmm. and really started rebuilding the whole business again. So,
wow.
I appreciate you being yes. so vulnerable. And I think people need to hear that and know, you know, that I guess, you know, my question is too, is like, I'm sure going through all that, I can't even imagine, but like, what do you have takeaways that looking back through all those challenges that, you know, it made you a better person to who you are today, or maybe you can help others, or maybe, I don't know, using those challenging times to
impact others.
Yeah. And maybe that's how you do it through your training. That maybe why you really love the training aspect of what you do.
Yeah. That's a great question, Sean, on things. I think one of the big things that I see and that I received from that was the mindset that no matter what people tell you in the way of excuses, that you can overcome it.
Mm-hmm.
And because I, you know, all these years I've been working with students, I have so many people come to me all the time. They're like, oh, I just don't know if I can do this. And I'm like, don't tell me that. But, you know, and I'm not trying to compare. I'm just trying to tell them, look, this is what I've been through, and I've been able to pull back out of this, you know, through bankruptcies, through personal tragedy and all this. So, you know, whatever you think that you can't overcome, you can if you really are committed to making it happen. And I've been able to share it with a lot of people, and I think make a big impact with others in their lives. So it's made a big difference for me on that side of things. And I mean, I don't wish anybody what I went through, but I also look at, there's a reason that I went through this. And if I can share and impact others, that's a blessing.
Absolutely. So,
that was heavy. Didn't expect that to start off with, but thank you so much. I mean, very impactful.
Mm-hmm.
I just had some questions you got a tremendous amount of years in the real estate investing game. And so I guess, you know, I would love to get your knowledge and wisdom, as here we go, your wisdom again on, for the real estate investment industry, you know, what are some big takeaways, you know, that you've learned over the 28 years? Because we have a lot of people that are thinking about getting into real estate that listen or are in the real estate investment mm-hmm. Industry, but I would love to hear your key takeaways from 28 years of wisdom.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the biggest things that I always bring up is when people ask me that, you know, if they, sometimes I get asked a question like, what would you have done differently if you started over, you know, back in those years? And I'll tell you one thing I would have done different right out of the gate is I would have started treating this as a business on day one. Mm. Okay. Good point. And a lot of people, and they say, well, what do you mean by that? Well, I think a lot of people get into this and this took me a lot of years to realize this, but a lot of people get into this and what they do is they get caught up into what I call just the real estate portion of this. And they become what I call just a deal chaser.
Right.
Just chase deals and deals and deals. Now I understand in the beginning, you're going to be that way for a little bit, but at the same time, when do you start treating this really as a real business? And see, when I did that, it took me quite a few years to realize that. In fact, to the point where I built it up, had multiple people working for me, built this big organization up. And then I realized I hated my team and I hated the whole thing I built. So I turned around and tore it down, rebuilt it again. But what I realized was, you know, there's a big difference. In fact, I pretty well drew a line down the center of a piece of paper. One side I wrote real estate, the other side I wrote business. The problem is most people, especially newer investors, they spend their whole career focused just on this one side of being caught up in the real estate, right, and they never focus on truly building a company. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Because when you build a business, what happens is real estate just becomes a product or a service. And then you can expand upon that because otherwise you're never getting out of that cycle of things and just, and it continues to consume you. And I did that for years,
We're the same way. Yeah. I mean, we have, starting off a similar experience because we started with Russ Whitney, was our late night infomercial. Yeah. And then, you know, I was 19 and I used, my parents had some college money set aside for me to go to college, and I used all of that on all the boot camps and mentorship programs. So we bought our very first home using a credit card. Yeah. So
our stories are pretty similar for sure.
I love it.
But, so looking back, I know that you were, you know, around the last recession, and maybe give us some things that maybe you learned from the last recession that maybe you're teaching your students now, you know, to prep for this recession coming up.
I think a big thing that I look at is what I learned from the last one was not being so heavily leveraged. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you've heard that many times. But a lot of people don't, you know, people hear it, but when you experience it, it's a whole different ballgame. You know, I remember having, you know, probably 20 properties sitting there with hard money loans and stuff on it. And it went to the point where I was not able to sell those for way over a year. Mm-hmm. And that's no fun. And that will just, you know, stress you to the max. So I think not over leveraging on things. I think being smart, if you're going to do the flip and fix model, be in properties that are more first time home buyer range where you can move those easily. And you have another thing too, is always remember on all your deals, especially any newer investors, always have multiple exit strategies on your property.
Good point. Okay? Yeah.
That's the big component. Cause if you're buying them right and you're not over leveraging those, you can, you know, we can do creative financing. There's just so many different ways we can do that. When you get into the really high end homes and stuff, and you're doing the rehabs and stuff on those, a lot of times you're in a position where you only have one exit and that's it. So you got to be really careful on that. So I think that's a big component. And then another thing too, is to realize that no matter what's going on, keep focused. Keep focused, because the thing is, there's always opportunity. There's always opportunity on that. And even when that, all that stuff was going on, all the craziness, you know, what's funny is we just kept focused and kept on, we changed our overall exits more on the deals, but we just kept focused and kept jamming on things. Because, you know, so many other people were focused on, you know, the fear side and just running.
Right.
And we went in deeper and heavier. And I think a big portion of it too, the reason we were able to go through that cycle is even back then we were focused on building more of a business instead of a side hustle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense to you guys?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
We're very similar with us for 2008. You know, we very similar to that. We always stuck to, we look back and like, what got us through that during those times? And it was, we stuck to
extreme focus.
Yeah. Very cookie cutter home. It was the entry level 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 2-car garage. Absolutely. We never, even though there people were chasing high-end homes, homes in Las Vegas and Phoenix and all that, we just stuck to our little flips, but we survived. And then when we needed to, like you said, like we got caught with a couple of homes. Like,
we held them.
We refinanced them and held them. And then they end up turning into some of our best deals we've ever done. But so similar story.
For investors, I think that's the hard part, is to really stay focused, right? Laser focus on it. Because as entrepreneurs, you know, we think shiny object syndrome, right? Everything comes to you, you want to take it down.
Especially with social media today, it's like they just see all these like, oh, this guy made all this money over here and
apartments
or whatever, and they're chasing all over.
Yeah, and keeping consistent with it is another. I think a lot of times investors give up too quickly because it's not working. It didn't happen. It didn't, you know, they didn't make money overnight, right? Yeah. It's
correct. Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that. That's one of the biggest things we preach in like our trainings, especially like our systems and ops type training that we work with students on, is, you know, how to build and scale the business. And number one thing is the consistency component, you know, and it's because I think in this business, as you guys know, that we get all these deal, you know, we have their leads come in, and then when we turn it into deals, what happens is it comes into the funnel. But the problem with most investors is once they get them into the funnel, what happens is decision fatigue kicks in and they go, should I flip this one? Should I wholesale? Should I buy and hold? And I eliminated all that, because what we did was we took it down to the point where when I reorganized things, I looked at it and I said, I need to look at this as if it's a manufacturing environment.
Mm. Good point. I like that.
Okay. So what happens is you look at it as a production line, because you imagine running a production line and you're running Toyota Camrys along there, boom, 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 boom. And all of a sudden you get a brain fart. Right. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, you're wanting to, right in the middle of the production line, you want to start running trucks. Mm-hmm. What does that do to your team's production? What does that do to everything? It throws everything off. So that's what we've been able to do. And it's allowed me to step out of the day-to-day side of things and empower my team, because now we pretty well look at over the next year, this is what we want to do in the business. We lay out the game plan. Then I empower other people to just take over it.
Yeah.
And so along that lines, how do you teach and recommend for scaling? So, you know, I know scaling was a big word for the last 5 years because everybody was scaling and growing, and that was what it was talked about. But especially in today's environment, you know, I you've already mentioned some probably points to it all, but what about scaling your company and growing? Is it just processes and procedures? Is it just focus? What do you recommend?
Well, definitely all above on that. But I think one of the big things I look at is I look at four phases that we all go through in business. And these four phases I look at, first of all, starts off with phase one is typically the launch phase. So a lot of newer investors, they're getting their business going, right? They're just kicking it up. They're starting to get deals flow and stuff like that. And then what happens is in a very short period of time, they go into the growth phase. And then the growth phase, typically what's happening in that side of things, what you're doing is you're starting to see them start to put in a few processes, right? They're starting to build that, maybe start and creating an overall operating system for the business. And then maybe making a hire or something like that. They're adding some virtual assistants and things. So they're doing that growth phase. Now, and I'm, as I mentioned, it's four phases. Now I'm going to skip over the third one and we'll come back to that. But what happens is most of the time people are in the growth phase and all of a sudden they say, oh, wow, I saw something on social media, or I saw this and I want to go and I'm going to scale this, right? So they go to scale. And what happens is they go to scale. Then in a very short period of time, I've heard this numerous times over and over many years, is they come back to and they say, that's it, I'm done. I'm going to just take it and make it simple with just me and somebody else, because this is crazy, right? And then it all comes back in their lap. Mm-hmm. And the reason behind that more than anything else is because they skip the third phase. And the third phase is what we call the constraint phase. Mm. And what I've learned on this is if you're going to build any type of business, especially, you know, in our side of things, you have to put constraints in place. Constraints on, as I mentioned, the type of deals you're going to do. You can't do them all.
Right.
You have to set certain margins that you're going to expect for your deals. And you can't vary from that mm-hmm. very far. It has to be within a range. You have to put constraints on yourself. Like, for instance, for myself, I had to stop making all the decisions. I had to start backing myself out of different operating sides of things, the things that I sucked at, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought I was good, but I really was not good at them.
Yeah.
And so you start putting constraints on all these areas. And what happens is you'll start to see your business really to flourish. And I'll tell you where I learned this from, guys, was a gentleman that I work with that worked a lot with Marcus Lemonis. You probably know him mm-hmm. from the Show the Profit.
Yeah.
And he has over 50 some companies. And that's one of the things he told me. He said, Jerry, you have to learn constraints. Because if you don't do that, what'll happen is you'll be constantly in all your companies, all your business, and you'll never really truly be able to scale properly. Mm-hmm. And that was a hard lesson for me to learn. So anybody that's looking at scaling, think about those four phases. Because if you don't set that third one in place, it will come back in your lap. And what happens, you'll be constantly stealing the ball from your team members.
Yeah.
And awesome. I used to do that all the time.
Yeah. I love it. I think that you explained that so perfectly. And I think we all go through that, right? And
it was I've seen it through all the masterminds we've been a part of. You see it all the time. You see these guys start small and boom, they try to scale and then they're not making any money. That's right. Why, that's what, you know, they find out like they've grown this big organization and they're not making any money and they're stressed out and then they scale all the way back down. And mm-hmm. I agree with you 100%. I've seen it numerous times in this business, but I think in any business, yeah, the constraints, we've had to learn that the hard way. I mean, from managing HOAs to, you know, like our ideal customer, you know, as far as the properties we manage and stuff like that. There's been numerous times mm-hmm. where anytime we get out of those constraints, you know, it's like it stresses out our team. It things just break.
Yeah.
It's huge. Yeah.
I mean, you're exactly right on that, Sean. And the problem is that, you know, especially a lot of times, you know, as a visionary, that's just our natural thing. That's mm-hmm. what we do. We look at all that and, you know, shiny object, you know, that we look at on things and, hey, we want this, we want this, we want to add this. And that's why, like, now, like, if I go to a training or I go to a mastermind, I'm not allowed to share that with the team anymore. Mm. Okay.
They're like, I cut you off, Jerry.
Yeah. It's like, you know, actually, Joey, that's exactly what happened. Ashley, my COO, she goes, that's it. No more on you. Yeah. Everything has to be brought to her. Yeah. And then she takes it to the team. Because I would be in a position where I would call a big meeting and I'd be sitting in a training for 3 days and I come back and I meet with the team and I would do a data dump on them in 60 minutes and say, put this to work. And they're like, we're still trying to figure out from your last week.
That's how we were.
That's
it was every
funny.
Quarter.
That's
we'd come back, yeah, we come back every quarter and be like, oh, great. Here they go again.
Yeah.
And we're pumped up. Yeah, psyched up. But something else I thought about when you were saying all that was, and I've seen this in some of our businesses that we ran, is like you grow to, so you start off, you have some systems and processes, usually just you and maybe somebody else, but then you focus on sales, right? And you really grow. And then there comes a point where, you know, you either have to provide the level of service or in the fulfillment part of it, and you aren't doing it well when you scale that quickly. Mm-hmm. Where you really truly need to almost slow down and stop. And it sounds like you've done this a couple of times where you fixed everything, rewrote your processes and procedures, or put your constraints in, and fix all the processes. Mm-hmm. And so now you can fulfill on the back end or the fulfillment of your product. And then you can scale again and grow into another, you know, income bracket or, mm-hmm. or revenue bracket. Yeah. I think it's hard as entrepreneurs to put the brakes on and stop and fix things before you move on. But
well, think about this. If you had a production line running, what's the best way to fix the production line? Go in and put a Band-Aid on it? shut it down for a little bit, fix it, then fire it back up.
Yeah.
And so actually, even just as of Monday, I had my management team, the ladies, by the way, I don't know why this happened, but every single person on my team, all women. I can't get a guy to stay. So they run them out. Yeah. So, but they all were meeting in Colorado with my COO at her house, and they were doing a management meeting. And what we do is at least twice a year, we do what we call a reset meeting mm-hmm. with their organization. And based upon that same thing, we're constantly retooling all the time, because we know if we don't retool, it's too easy to get off track. It's too easy to form bad habits, and it will affect the overall production process.
That's great. Awesome. Well, I want to kind of get into a little bit of your sales training business and your coaching business. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and how, you know, what you're teaching your students and any events that you have coming up?
Yeah. So, Joni, a couple of things that we do is we specialize in two areas, really. One is we've become very well known for what we call our systems and operations training for mm-hmm. real estate investors. And what it comes down to is who's the type of person that would come to that? It's typically the real estate investor who is in a position where they're tired of doing everything themselves. They're constantly in that grind mode. They can't figure out how to hire the right people. They build a team. They just don't understand that structure. And they don't understand that this is a true production process.
Right.
And it doesn't really matter what your strategy is with the deals. Okay, just like you guys, you know, on the management side, if it's buy and hold, it's management, whatever it is, these still have to be in place.
Right.
So what we've done is by doing this is we've set up an event that we do, and we've learned that this is one of the best ways to people really get trained on this is we actually have people come right into our office. We actually have an in-house training space in our office. And we have investors come in from around the country. In fact, we got one coming up December 1st and 2nd here. And we do it on a smaller basis. It's not a huge group of people. So we keep it smaller. And what we do is we basically walk them through on day one through each department of our business.
Wow.
We walk them through, you know, the marketing department, the acquisitions, the dispositions, the transaction coordinating, all these different, even the assistants get mm-hmm. up and share on their things. So it's not just myself and my COO doing it. You get a chance to work with each department within the organization. So I think it creates a really unique learning experience. That's why we can't do huge groups.
Yeah, that's huge. And yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's this night and day difference for people. They get a chance to see it, experience it, ask questions to the people on the front lines. And then on top of that, what we do is we give them our complete operating process that we have, and they can mirror that. And then what we do on day two is we do breakouts, and we actually take everybody's company, rip it apart, and lay out a game plan for them.
Wow.
So yeah, it's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun, and it makes huge changes on people's business. So that's our one event that we do is what we call our systems and operations training. And like I said, we got our next one's coming up December 1st and 2nd here in Ohio. I know that's a great place to be
in December.
But it's, you know, we're right along the highway, so it's pretty easy access. But I always look at this, you know, you could, if people say, ah, that's cold. Well, you can make excuses or you can make money. You can't make both. Right?
No. Right. Yeah.
So that's one train. And then our other side of things is that we actually have always done an acquisitions training for many years, but this year here, I actually acquired the REI Sales Academy that John Martinez originally created. And the reason we've done that, because it was a perfect fit for what we were already mm-hmm. doing. And John also had reached out to me and said, hey, you know, I think you're a perfect fit for this. I have done trainings with John before. My team has always used his system on things. So that's the other half. And what we've learned on that, guys, is that this is probably an area I think that most investors are so weak at.
Yeah.
And it's not, and we look at two different ways. One, we have the beginner investors that mm-hmm. come to our sales training that are, and this is what really, it bothers me a lot, because I see a lot of investors going out there newbies that are investing a lot of money into marketing, you know, through these different marketing platforms, and they don't know how to convert the deals. So a lot of them learn the strategies, but the strategy is the end that's just the strategy itself. You got to get to the strategy.
Yeah.
To get to the strategy, you've got to diagnose the problem. And it's like, I always tell people, you're trying to go to the logical side, and complex decisions for sellers are made from the emotional side, not the logical side.
Right.
You have to go through the emotional side first. And that's what we do, is we train people how to convert deals on a much higher level.
Yeah.
We do that through the sales academy. And then the other type of client we have are the seasoned investors that say, hey, you know what? I know how to buy the deals and can convert them now. But the problem is I have a team and I don't have time to train them. So what we do is we become their sales training arm. That's what we do there.
Yeah.
So.
And we've sent our team through their AI sales academy, and it's been awesome. And they got a ton out of it. And you still do it like weekly calls and either Zoom calls and that's, yeah.
Yeah, we do a live weekly webinar that I actually do myself. I love doing it because I love sales. And then we also set it up where I have the whole online academy, which is all the self-paced and really kind of on-demand training where people can go in and dive in deep into particular areas. Maybe they're having problems with struggling from, could be deal killers to how they're setting up the call, whatever it could be, resistance, you know, from a seller. So we have that portion of too. So that's all part of the academy. And then we also do some live boot camps with the academy. In fact, we just had one in September. And that was our first one. So it was in Cincinnati. We had a good turnout. And we're going to be able to do another one, I think, coming up in March, actually in Dallas, I believe.
Oh, cool.
Nice. Get info our neck that. Of the woods.
Yeah. So yeah. If I could, with all your years of experience, and I gave you, or you had a crystal ball, where's the market headed? Yeah. What can... if you knew, but I am not saying that, you know, putting you on the spot, but I am putting you on the spot. Like where do you think the market's headed and what advice do you have for people for 2023 and the rest of this year?
Well, I'm where the market's going. You're exactly right. That's a crystal ball and things, but obviously, you know, we're definitely seeing an effect with increased rates. But at the same time, I think the people that are freaking out more about the rates are people that have never experienced anything else the cheap rates. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And because I remember being in a position where rates were double digits. Okay. And we thought those were good. Okay. So I think that's all perspective of where you're at on things and where you've been. So I think, you know, where the market's going on that, I think, you know, we're definitely heading for higher rates. There's no question on that. I believe strong on that. I believe those are on deck right now as we speak. And so that's going to come down. But I think that the investors that really win on this side of things, it goes back to more focus on things and being very smart. Where you're not getting into over leveraging on things that if you're buying right, and you always know that, you know, if you're especially buying hold or anything, like if you know your returns are going to be in a position where you're going to exceed your cost on things, and you really can't go wrong with that. I mean, it's no different than buying a business. It's like I did. Okay. I look at the same thing. It's all cash flow. Okay. It's all cash flow. But when that cash flow comes to the point where it's going the opposite direction, you know, that's where the investors get in trouble. So I think, you know, being very smart about your acquisitions, make sure you're not over leveraged, check your cash flow, always on that side of things, and stay away from too many shiny objects.
That's a great tip right there.
Yeah. Just focus, guys. Uh-huh. I mean, all you listeners on this, that's my biggest thing. And that's why I mentioned about putting constraints.
Right.
The sooner you can do that, start putting it on yourself, the more money you're going to make, the more impact you're going to make, you're going to feel a lot less stress, because I've done all that other stuff. I've done all that stuff. I bought multifamily. I've done commercial deals, everything over those years. And I just learned that, you know, I sometimes I look at there's a million ways to make a million bucks just in real estate. Mm-hmm. Right. And you just got to focus. And when you focus like that, you become very, very good at that. And just keep going on things. And realize too that I look at as these new years coming up, the next couple of years, that I think anybody that masters the creative financing too, mm-hmm. is going to be extremely ahead of the game.
Right.
Okay. And that's why we train all our salespeople about programs. Mm-hmm. It's all about programs. So, you know, you think about acquisitions, most people are single shot. You have to look at when you work with people, when it comes to acquisitions, if they don't qualify for this program, take them to this program. Yeah. They don't qualify here, take them to this program. And that's how you're going to win in the new markets and the way it changes on that. You've got to be flexible on your programs, but focused on the results.
Awesome.
I love it. So Jerry, with you've obviously built an incredible business, and what's your next?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the big thing right now is our big focus is to grow the sales academy, mm-hmm. and we're putting a lot of energy into that. We really want to double the size of that company and just watch it continue to grow, because it's something that right now, obviously you need it all the time, but I think as we change markets too and the shifting, the better you can become at acquiring the deals, mm-hmm. you're going to be ahead. So we're putting a lot of emphasis on that. And so that's our big plans for right now. Something else, I got a couple, my sons that I got one left in high school and the rest are out of school, but two of my younger sons, one's 18, the younger one, and also 22, and they're wanting to get involved in the business some. And
nice,
something kind of cool we're working on right
cool.
now. Yeah, it's, I'm excited about. They're actually, we're working on a game plan to do tiny houses.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, so
love to see that. Yeah, coming. So it's probably fun to have your kids follow and.
Oh yeah,
teach them
it's always a dream of ours. We'll see. Awesome.
Well, we really appreciate today and you taking the time, you know, of your busy schedule. And so I know you provided a ton of value. We learned a lot and just some really solid, you know, advice, I think.
Practical advice.
Yeah,
mm-hmm, for sure.
It's all that wisdom you have. So we thank you again. And if there's anything we can do for you, please let us know. Thank you.
And Jerry, how can investors or somebody who maybe is interested in your sales training or your operations training, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, absolutely. Reach out to me. My main website is thejerrygreen.com. Okay. Pretty simple on that. And then our sales training is the REISalesAcademy.com. REISalesAcademy.com and thejerrygreen.com. And you guys can just follow me on Facebook or Instagram there. And that's a great way to connect with me as well. But love to help you. As I mentioned, we got another 2-day training coming up December 1st and 2nd right here in office. I think we got about 8 seats left right now. So
awesome. Sweet. Well, we'll also have that in the show notes as well, so it's we can access it easily.
Yeah. So if you're interested in his sales training coming up, please reach out soon. I'm sure that's going to sell out, and we'll have all that again in the show notes, so you can follow Jerry and take advantage of a lot of the programs that he offers. So thank you again, Jerry, and we'll see everybody next week.
See you, everyone.
Thank you, guys.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there talking.
Talk, talk, talking.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website, at InsideTheWolfsDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.